Welcome to the NutraCast, a production by Nutra Ingredients USA. I'm Danielle Masterson. Thank you for joining me here on the NutraCast, where we talk and share insights from inside the nutrition industry. The National Football League is partnering with Canadian researchers on a clinical trial to test the safety and efficacy of CBD for pain management and neuroprotection from concussions. Here to talk us through the implications for the industry and CBD's role in pain management and athletic training is Dr. Ryan Green, CBD Distillery's medical advisor. Hi, Dr. Green, and welcome to the NutraCast.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you on. So the NFL first announced it would be providing funding for the project as well as a separate study back in 2022, and the league has agreed to spend $1 million on the cannabis trials. So how has the CBD landscape in pro sports evolved over the past few years from your vantage point?
You know, from my perspective, the pro sports landscape is becoming a little bit more tolerant and understanding that the world of pro sports where athletes were just fed a steady diet of painkillers and anti-inflammatories has been inappropriate and something that provides most likely more harm than good. And many of these athletes were seeking alternative therapies to help deal with aches, pains, both in the body and to deal with head injury as well for a long time, except many of them were not considered legal within the pro sports landscape and ultimately led to penalty. But I think there's been enough education, research, and advocacy for some of these alternative therapies, such as cannabis and CBD. It's exciting to see that these professional sports leagues in the NFL especially is at least willing to investigate and study if there would be a benefit for utilizing or recommending these therapies as an opportunity and a way for athletes to treat their bodies and their minds without the potential risk of addiction or, you know, greater harm than good by using the traditional methods that have been employed to date.
Yeah, it's very encouraging to see all this research. I know every sport is a little bit different, but can you kind of tell us how athletes should navigate CBD use within sports regulations?
Yeah, so there's various governing bodies depending on your sport, whether it's the World Anti-Doping Agency or the US Anti-Doping Agency, there's the Olympic Anti-Doping Agencies. Ultimately, it's up to the athlete to be aware of what's legal and what's not and what they're putting into their body. And regardless of how you feel about a rule or a regulation, ultimately, what's there is there, and you are responsible for what you ingest. And there's been plenty of stories where athletes, whether they're being truthful or not, have said, I didn't know I was taking this. Someone gave this to me, or, you know, I took this and on the bottle, it said there was, you know, nothing that was prohibited. Then when I got tested, something popped. So the athlete has to be the most responsible in terms of understanding what are the rules, regardless if you agree with them or not. So, you know, especially in the CBD world, if your governing body deems that that's an inappropriate substance to utilize, that's the rule set that you have to follow. And hopefully with research such as, you know, what you mentioned earlier, there will be a little bit more breathing room in terms of what these athletes are able to utilize to help treat themselves. But ultimately, until the regulations change within your sport, you have to follow the rules. So trying to find supplements that are not only not on the banned list, but also maybe third-party tested, whether that's NSF certified or whatnot, is ultimately very important, because in the world of nutraceuticals, it's kind of the Wild West. You know, as long as it's generally regarded as safe for consumption, it's not going to immediately harm you. The nutraceutical space, unlike the pharmaceutical space, has less oversight and less quality control. And there's an opportunity that something could be in a supplement that may prohibit an athlete from participating in their sport, which would be unfortunate.
Yeah, and as we know, all CBD is not created equally. So you mentioned NSF. What are some other certifications or things on the label that athletes should look for?
So NSF is the National Science Foundation. That's probably the most reputable of the resources that are available. To be honest, there's some other third-party testing services that are utilized, but for the most part, NSF seems to be the preeminent entity. when an athlete's looking for a supplement that would be considered clean, I would leave it at as if it's NSF certified, you can presume with a high degree of certainty that the product will probably be exactly what's on the label.
Okay. And at the heart of the issue is the potential benefits of CBD, of course. Can you give us some background on this study involving the NFL and these Canadian researchers?
Yeah, so essentially what's trying to be evaluated is there a therapeutic benefit of CBD as an alternative to other treatments such as opiates, especially for concussions? And so the question is if an athlete's utilizing CBD, is it safe to be used, you know, prior to, during, and after sports, meaning in a way that's not going to impact them or harm them negatively? So, you know, although many athletes have probably been using CBD on their own, ultimately there isn't a body of evidence that's randomized controlled trial or something of that sort, where we have definitive scientific evidence that, yes, this is the potential protective benefit or healing benefit. Here's, you know, dosing strategies. Here's timing that we think it would be best utilized. And, you know, unfortunately, we're not living in a world where we can use anecdotal reports or case reports. These larger entities that are responsible for many people will want well-conducted scientific studies to better define exactly how, what, when these supplements should be utilized. So, you know, that's the value of this investigation. The tough part is, you know, studies looking at something that's naturally occurring, such as CBD, it's a different world than a proprietary pharmaceutical that has the potential to make a significant amount of money. So the question is, these studies cost a lot of money. Are they able to recruit enough people to see, you know, a significant effect? The downside with smaller studies, smaller numbers of people, is there's a potential that, you know, no significant change is seen. Doesn't mean that there's not some benefit, but it may not be significant enough to be what's considered statistically significant. And then the question is if you don't achieve statistical significance in terms of an outcome you're looking for, will that lead to meaningful change in terms of regulation? It's difficult to determine. So we'll see how the study goes and ultimately what are the outcomes and subsequently what are the changes that are considered and implemented by, you know, the NFL and other major sport leagues.
Mm-hmm. And so just based on your knowledge and previous studies that you've looked at, I mean, what do we know about CBD use for pain management?
The endocannabinoid system is one of the largest neural networks in the body. Pretty much every receptor, every neurologic connection has sites for binding of these endocannabinoids, whether it's, you know, a CBD product or a THC product. So clearly our body was designed to utilize these compounds in terms of subjective response, you know, in terms of reducing pain, inflammation, subsequent to trauma, whether that's, you know, at the head or central nervous system level or peripherally, there seems to be subjective benefit. So again, like, people have been using these compounds for thousands of years. I think in our world and landscape where scientifically we can now extract and isolate certain subtypes, I think there's definitely going to be value across the board, whether it's improving sleep, recovery, pain, you know, helping facilitate faster recovery from, you know, mild traumatic brain injury. I think there's a lot of potential opportunity. Ultimately, more money will need to be utilized and allocated so that we can study these things a little bit more rigorously. But from a physiologic standpoint, we know that, you know, this endocannabinoid system that CBD interacts with is everywhere in the body. So, you know, whether we're producing these compounds endogenously, meaning like our own body's producing them, or we're ingesting them, you know, our body was clearly designed to utilize them in some way.
Mm-hmm. So just taking what you know and what you've seen, what do you expect to come out of this research?
You know, my one concern is that studies in order to see significant difference that the scientific community can then say, you know, this is unequivocally good or bad, or there's no change, require a lot of people, a lot of subjects, you know, whether that's an animal model or a human model. And the tough part is recruiting, paying for, and executing these studies to achieve that statistical significance, that number of people needed to see a meaningful effect. And, you know, this study is designed for, I believe, 35 players. Will that be a significant enough size of individuals? Maybe, maybe not. So, you know, my one concern is if we don't see statistical significance, but, you know, when you further evaluate the data, like clearly there's a benefit or maybe not that's observed, will that be enough to change rule or regulation within the governing body of the pro sport? It's too soon to tell, but at least we're making steps in that direction.
Yeah. So I've been attending various trade shows these past few years. We definitely witnessed a CBD explosion. You really couldn't go anywhere without seeing it. But the last few shows I've been to, it's been very obvious that the excitement has died down. Do you think this is due to regulatory uncertainty?
Potentially. I think also as the CBD space grew, a lot of, I don't want to say bad actors, but entities that were producing compounds that were potentially manipulated or provided for the general population that may not have been as high of quality as they could possibly be. And, you know, people didn't appreciate the potential benefit that could have been achieved had they used a high quality supplement. I think it's one of those things where it became quite available quite quickly. And as I mentioned previously, without significant oversight, I think there's an opportunity for malfeasance in the space where you're not getting something that's harming people, but you may be producing something that's going to have no potential benefit. And then you get, you know, kind of the general consensus, oh, I tried CBD, it didn't work for me. Well, it may have just been that the quality of your product was not appropriate for you to achieve the outcome you're looking for. And again, you know, most people, when they're in pain, they're searching for something to help them somewhat immediately. And if they don't find that, they're going to move on. So I believe there was probably an impact of the availability became quite significant quite quickly, and the oversight to ensure quality was lacking.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any predictions for the future of CBD in terms of regulations?
It's difficult to say. Again, like, you know, right now there's hurdles in terms of CBD companies being able to sell nationally due to federal regulations regarding CBD and cannabis. Obviously, state by state, it's become a lot easier. I just think it's going to be a slow rollout. And ultimately, I believe there are going to be other things that are coming out in the mental health space, whether that's MDMA or other psychedelics, that I think are equally as potent, if not more powerful. So, you know, ultimately, it's going to take time for people to not only understand how these compounds work, because again, if there's no proprietary benefit, meaning, you know, a pharmaceutical company can't make money off the production, the amount of study and scientific research that's necessary for the medical community to adopt and implement these things is just going to be slow. And we have to acknowledge that and realize that this isn't going to be something that may change quickly over the next few years. It may be a decade or so.
And as you mentioned, you know, it takes time, it takes money, and we all know pharma has money, but does Nutra have enough money to back some of this research?
That's a good question, right? Because any human study requires a lot of people, requires a lot of time, and that requires a lot of money. You know, pharmaceutical companies studying a proprietary compound, meaning something they can patent and make a lot of money off of, such as, you know, Viagra or something like that, you're looking 10 to 30 or $40 million just to get that executed. Obviously, the upside, if it works, is in the billions plus. So the ROI is there. But for nutraceutical companies where that patentability is not necessarily available, do they have the resources to fund the studies necessary? It's difficult. It's very difficult.
Mm-hmm. And you've kind of mentioned it a little bit with some of these other compounds. What are your thoughts on minor cannabinoids like CBN and CBG?
I think they have therapeutic value for various conditions, whether it's sleep or weight loss. That being said, it's going to follow a similar path as CBD, which is we'll have small studies, we'll have anecdotal reports, some case studies and things like that. And it'll ultimately be up to not only the individual, but the practitioner that's considering prescribing these therapies. One, do they believe it'll work? Two, do they have a source for which they can find products that they believe are reputable? And ultimately, is that something that an individual, because again, like with opiates or anti-inflammatories, you tend to see benefit quite quickly. That's why they're, you know, often utilized. With more naturally occurring compounds, oftentimes it takes consistent dosing over a period of time to manifest the outcomes you're looking for. And, you know, we live in a world of instant gratification. So there's something to be considered there, which is, can we help educate people to understand that these compounds are designed for, you know, specific uses, but they need to be used consistently over time. And it's not as quick as taking, you know, a 5 milligram OxyContin and experiencing pain relief within 30 minutes.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest difference that a lot of, especially consumers, don't understand is when you take an aspirin or something like that, your headache goes away. But with nutraceuticals, it takes time to build up in your system.
Correct. You know, and with our patient population that I work with, you know, we do a lot of lifestyle modification and working on putting plans in place that can be executed sustainably over time. And that sometimes includes a CBD compound or, you know, something in that world. And if you're not sleeping well, eating well, moving your body, using your supplements consistently as they're prescribed, will the outcome be achieved? And you know, oftentimes, if you're inconsistent, the answer is no. And then people lose confidence and they end up reverting to what they know works, which, you know, tends to be in the pharmaceutical space. And then we don't make much progress.
Mm-hmm. And do you kind of consult with athletes?
Yeah. I mean, we get a handful of athletes in my practice, and the conversation always begins with, you know, I'm not going to provide you anything that is illegal for you to participate in your sport. And part of that is the athlete being aware of what their governing body allows or does not allow, and also requires my understanding, and ultimately a consensus has to be achieved in terms of, like, you know, these are the rules, these are the risks, and, you know, I'm not going to provide you something that's going to get you in trouble or potentially hurt. That's my personal policy. Obviously, there are plenty of physicians, you know, that have been documented throughout the last few years and decades who have felt like they are comfortable operating in the gray. And it's not something that I'm willing to do. So those are my boundaries.
Okay. And so when you're talking with these athletes, are they trying to get away from opiates and things that are not so natural?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, athletes, male, female, they acknowledge that, you know, pounding aspirin, ibuprofen, Tylenol, opiates, things like that is not good for them. They feel it. They know it, whether it changes their mood or impacts their gut health. They acknowledge these things aren't healthy for them long term, but there's also the pressure of, I have to perform. This is my livelihood. And if I'm not doing something, someone else might. And if that means they then get a step ahead in terms of playing time, you know, potential contract or a performance outcome, like, those are some things that have to be considered. You know, for instance, when I was a medical student working with some professional sports teams, there's a compound called Toradol. It's an injected, highly powerful anti-inflammatory that basically, you know, reduces any sensation of pain for 6 to 8 hours. And up until about 10 years ago, it wasn't prohibited. And then I believe the NFL and a couple other professional sports leagues recognize the significant impact it had on kidney function and also the gut, and basically prohibited its utilization. Yet many sports teams acknowledged, like, this works and we need our athletes to perform, so we're willing to look the other way and continue to utilize. And if we get caught, you know, the penalty is a slap on the wrist, so to speak. So those things absolutely happen. But there's a lot of factors at play, because when, you know, these athletes are potentially sacrificing, you know, millions of dollars in a contract based on their performance or lack thereof, it's interesting to see how someone's mindset in terms of a supplement or a pharmaceutical changes in terms of their willingness to utilize.
Yeah, there's just so much pressure to perform. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
What would you say is CBD Distillery's primary challenge?
You know, again, it's a landscape that's constantly changing. We, you know, touched on the fact that there was a boom for a while, and now it seems like there's kind of a bust. You know, I think for me, you know, one of the notable areas of concern is when CBD became so widely available, you could get it at a 7-Eleven or a, you know, a convenience store. The question regarding quality has to be considered, and it's tough for groups like CB Distillery to make a mark and an impact in a market where you got a lot of bad actors, so to speak. So I think, you know, quality control and making sure the individual understands where are they getting their supplement from, what are the quality control metrics that are in place, who's certifying, what testing are they willing to subject their product to, even though, you know, it may provide an outcome that they don't want, because they acknowledge, like, hey, you know, our purification process or whatever is not as good as we thought it could be. Like, those companies that are willing to at least test and share the results of their outcomes, I think should be components that are considered by an individual trying to find a high quality supplement producer.
So many factors to take into consideration for everyone, but especially athletes. CBD Distillery's medical advisor, Dr. Ryan Green, thank you so much for talking us through CBD's potential for pain management and for joining me here on the NutriCast.
Thank you guys for having me.
If you like what you just heard, you can subscribe to the NutriCast wherever you get your podcast. You can also head to NutraIngredients-USA.com for even more Nutra-related content. Thank you for listening. I'm Danielle Masterson. As always, I'll catch you here on the NutriCast next week.